teenagers do weird and crazy things. It's what your teenage years are for. But why would 19-year-old Susan Swindell change into a short skirt before leaving work during a blizzard in the middle of January? Was it a party? A date? Unfortunately, we still don't know. Hi guys, welcome back to The Missing Ones. I'm your host, Liberty Campbell. Today, we are talking about a 19-year-old girl who went missing in January of 1988. Her disappearance was tragic and stopped her sister's whole world. Almost 33 years later, her family is still looking for answers about why a smart and talented young girl just vanished into thin air. Before we start, I want to give a disclaimer that there might be some sensitive topics in this episode that might be unsettling or triggering, so please proceed with caution. In the early evening of January 19th, 1988, Susan Swindell called her mom at about 4 p.m. from her job at the local Kmart, told her mom that she would be leaving right after her shift ended at 9 p.m. and would be home very soon. According to some coworkers, she asked her mom what the safest route home would be because there was a blizzard and she reportedly hated driving in bad weather. Her plan was to go straight home after her shift. But before she left, Susan did something weird, especially for someone who was about to brave a Minnesota blizzard. She changed out of her red pantsuit that she had worn to work that day into a short skirt and a light sweater. Not only is that strange attire for a snowstorm, I mean, when it's barely snowing, I'm in layers of clothes and I don't even go outside. I hate it. I hate the snow. So I can't imagine why anyone would put a short skirt and a light sweater on to go out into a Minnesota blizzard. The family thought this was weird because, like, that's not something she would normally wear. Not long after leaving work, her 1975 Oldsmobile Cutlass overheated, causing her to have to pull over at a gas station that was just 1 mile from her home on the corner of Manning Avenue and Highway 5. Susan was followed into the station by another car, and according to the gas station attendant, she spoke to the guy before going into the store. She asked the attendant if she could leave her car there at the station until she could figure out what was wrong with it. He said yes, but that she needed to move it. After she moved her car, she got into the car, driven by the unidentified man, and left. This was the last time anyone has ever seen Susan alive. Or period, really. The gas station employee described the man driving the car as having shoulder-length curly hair and a well-built physique. He was tall, unshaven, and wore a leather jacket. Now, I don't know how the gas station attendant knew all of that, because everything I read said that the guy didn't actually go into the store. So I don't know if, like, maybe the blizzard hadn't really started yet and it was pretty easy to see the guy, or he did go into the store and it just, like, didn't process to news outlets to, like, report that. I don't know. But that's the description we have. As for the car that Susan got into, we don't know a make or a model. It was light in color. It was an older model with sporty wheels. It was in good shape, but it was dirty. Fortunately, the witness was able to give police enough of a description to get a sketch of the unidentified man. The sketch will be on my blog page if you'd like to take a look. I'm sitting here looking at it and he has a very long face and a very long nose. He is very unique looking. So I mean, if somebody obviously has to know him, he's not very generic looking, but that's my two cents on it. By 11 p.m., Susan's mom begins to get worried for her daughter. With the storm being as bad as it was, her mom wanted to make sure that Susan wasn't stuck in a ditch or even trying to walk home in a storm. There was no sign of Susan until the next morning when her car was discovered. Police searched Susan's car and they found her driver's license, purse, and glasses inside. All things she would have taken with her if she was running away. Especially her glasses. She was very nearsighted and could barely function without them. The car was taken into a repair shop about 5 days after Susan went missing, and the professional mechanics determined that the petcock, a drain valve for the car's radiator, had been loosened, and the car had no water in it, which was wide overheated. I was curious, so I asked my husband, who happens to be a mechanic, how hard it would be to loosen this, and he said it would be pretty easy, but it would most likely require a pair of pliers or even a wrench to loosen it. It would be extremely unlikely that it would come loose on its own. Because of this, authorities believe that someone had intentionally done this to her car so that they could offer her a ride when it malfunctioned. That's it. This is all that is known about Susan's last moments before she went missing. Police listed her as a runaway because she was 19 and she technically is an adult. And I'm gonna stop here for a second. If you're wondering why I chose to do her because she's technically an adult, it's because every time I go to Walmart, I see her face on the board of missing kids, and it just, like, it spoke to me, and I had to look her up. I had to tell you guys about her. Someone somewhere knows something, and I felt the need. I'm not gonna get into it, but I felt like you guys needed to hear this story, and I felt like I needed to tell it. Anyways, I'm moving on now. In the weeks before Susan went missing, she racked up a $300 phone bill by talking to boys on a telephone chat line. Her coworkers said that she was receiving multiple calls at the Kmart store from an unknown man, and she even had plans to meet up with an unnamed ex-boyfriend on the night she went missing, but he actually called to cancel because the weather was getting so bad. Investigators looked into everyone, and each time they came up empty-handed. As far as I could tell, no one has ever been named a suspect or even a person of interest in the 33 years that Susan has been missing. Her mother does believe that Susan came back to their apartment a few days after she went missing. Her sister Christine got home from school to discover the spare house key was missing. After finding it under a brick, Christine went inside to find new dirty dishes in the sink and a strange odor hanging in the air that some described as what could possibly be marijuana. But Christine said she didn't know. I mean, she wasn't familiar with marijuana or what it smelled like. And if you know, I mean, it's got a pretty distinctive smell. Later that night, her mom was doing laundry. She actually found the outfit that Susan had worn to work on the day she went missing, balled up and jammed underneath the bed. Nothing personal of Susan's was missing, but it was very apparent that someone had been there. Susan's mom, Kathy, wishes that authorities would have taken this more serious at the time, but because she was considered a runaway, it wasn't really taken very seriously. I mean, she was considered an adult and could do whatever she wanted. Police weren't super concerned. If anything, to them, I mean, it was a good sign. She's alive, she's okay, she showed up, grabbed some stuff, maybe you didn't notice. Here we are, she's gone, it's fine. For months after Susan disappeared, her family searched for her. They put up posters, handed out flyers. Law enforcement did do a search, and a $25,000 reward was even offered for information leading to her whereabouts, but no leads or tips have ever been produced. And you should know that $25,000 reward is still up for grabs. There have been very few tips in her case. In 1989, her dental records were compared to a Jane Doe, but the results were negative. There were three sightings of her years later, one at a bar in Centerville, Michigan, a Burger King in Northeast Minneapolis, and in Ashland, Tennessee. In 2006, hope was sparked once more when there was a hit on her social security number, but unfortunately, it was a scam. A woman had found enough information about Susan that she was able to steal her identity. The woman decided that she looked enough like Susan and tried to join the military under her identity. The hopes of Kathy and Christine were crushed once more. Washington County Sheriff's Office established a task force dedicated to investigating her disappearance. Commander Andy Ellickson is leading this team and says that they are looking at everything from day one. They are re-interviewing Susan's acquaintances and have even traveled as far as California to conduct some of these interviews. In 2018, investigators took the pants that she had been wearing before she disappeared and tested them. Even though the pants had been washed and worn multiple times by her sister, since she went missing, they wanted to cover their bases. They wanted a double check. Personally, feel like it was pointless, but I get it. In the late 80s, DNA testing was a thing of the future. I mean, it was coming around, but it wasn't really something that was reliable. And it's unbelievably unfortunate that they didn't think to preserve this at the time. Because if they had, there would be a slight possibility that we would know what happened. And something really cool happened in 2002, though. Her family had their blood drawn and submitted their DNA to the state. This was the first quote-unquote missing person relative sample in history. Since then, family DNA has really grown to become something mind-blowing. It has been used to solve crimes and locate missing people in many different cases. I mean, are you familiar with the Golden State Killer? Joseph James D'Angelo? He was caught through familial DNA. It is still in its infancy, but I truly believe that it will be the key to solving countless crimes. I mean, it could even be the clue to the Zodiac Killer? I mean, maybe, probably not, because I don't know if they have DNA on him. I don't think they do. I really have no idea. But I just want to, like, talk about the fact that they decoded his message. It's amazing to me. Anyways, crime junkie moment, moving on. Susan's mother and her sister hold on to hope that Susan will come home. Her sister Christine said that her whole world stopped when her sister went missing. Her grades suffered, she dealt with eating disorders and depression, she stopped attending parties and other social events, she never had kids or any kind of romantic relationship. She just wanted her sister to be home. It was just too hard to move on in life without her. Susan Swindell was last seen on January 19th, 1988. In Lake Elmo, Minnesota, at a gas station on the corner of Manning Avenue and Highway 5, during a blizzard. She was seen wearing a short skirt, a sweater, and possibly a down black coat. She got into an unidentified man's car. After hers overheated, the car is described as light in color, with sporty wheels, and despite being in good shape, it was dirty. The man she was last seen with is described as 6'2", had long, sandy brown, curly hair, was unshaven, and wearing a leather coat. I have said this time and time before, you guys. Someone has to know something. No one goes missing, willingly or unwillingly, without at least one person knowing. If you or someone you know is that someone, please contact the Washington County Sheriff's Office tip line at 651-430-7850. You could just be the one to bring her home. Remember, guys, see something, say something. Thanks, guys, for listening. Any sources and photos from this case and others I've covered in the past can be found on my blog, themissingonespodcast.wordpress.com. Make sure you follow me over on Instagram at Liberty Luray and Twitter by searching The Missing Ones Podcast. I'll talk to you guys next week.